I see a lot of young people today do things that are easy because it gives them quick results. Whilst in fact, they should be doing things that are impactful, but they avoid it because obviously it takes a longer time to make these things work. I see good people not talk about their stories. And those who have stories, they don't even get the right airtime to even make their stories known. But today, I have a good woman here. And she's going to share her story with us, a story that is going to help young people make good decisions in life.
Hey there, welcome to the Kwame Nanda Power Podcast, where I'll be sharing insights on surviving the various phases of life as a youth living in Ghana. I am Kwame Nanda Power, your host.
Ladies and gentlemen, help me welcome my guest for today, Cassandra Dapa. Hi, Cassandra.
Hello, Kobna.
Thank you for being on my show.
Thank you. It's a privilege to be here.
Super, super. So, Cassandra has 2 decades experience as a banker.
Approximately 19 years.
19 years. And you are a banker, you're a mother, you're a wife, and you do all of these things.
Yes.
Okay. So, how has life been for you, you know? Mostly, I tell my audience that they have to look at, like I was saying in the opening, doing difficult things so that they have results that are impactful. And I want to know, how has your life been from childhood? You know, when I met you and we're having a conversation about these shoots, you told me some very interesting things about your childhood. Mm-hmm. And I found it very intriguing. I mean, looking at you, how you are today, nobody would think you came from that background. But tell us a bit about how life started to teenage, university, and then how you started national service.
Okay, so I'd say it's been an interesting journey. Growing up as a child, you know, grew up from, you know, a very Christian family.
Okay.
And lived with my mom and father. We had an early childhood in Nigeria.
Okay.
And then moved somewhere to Ghana in the 90s. So we moved, and with my 4 sisters, we went straight to our grandmother's village somewhere in the eastern region in Kwabeng.
So from the airport straight to the village?
Straight to
the,
okay, so I'd say we spent some time in Dansuman and then straight to our grandmother's village because we're pretty young at the time, and our mom was also quite busy as a businesswoman, and so she wouldn't stay at one place, so she was commuting between Ghana, Nigeria, La Côte d'Ivoire at the time.
Mm.
And she needed someone she could trust her children with at the time. So she took us to our grandmother who lived in the village there in Kwabeng. So part of my elementary education started in Nigeria and then continued in the village because my grandmother was a Presbyterian. We had to go to a Presby school. And those days, if you recall, if let's say your parents were Anglicans, you were likely to go to an Anglican school. So they took us to the Kwabeng Presby primary and JSS. And then I proceeded to Ghana Secondary School in Koforidua, where I had my secondary education.
But how was the village life like? Was it typical village, like lantern, bobo kind of lifestyle, going to the farm? How was it like?
Yes, it was a proper village setting. At the time, they didn't have electricity, so we had to, use lantern. You'd see the women selling in the night with, you know, I don't know if you know how bobo looks like. Yes. So I don't know if you know how it looks like, but something like that. But we used to use a lantern.
I think maybe you want to define bobo. I'm sure some of my people listening don't even know what bobo is.
Normally they'll put kerosene in a tin, you know, a traditionally made tin. And then you'd see something like a wool, a thread form in it. So you just need to light it with your matches. And what gives it the energy is the kerosene inside it.
Yes. Okay.
And, you know, normally it has the smoke that comes, and then when you're around it, all your skin can actually turn into black. So that was the effect that bobo would give you. But I studied with the lantern because there was no light at the time in the village. I saw my grandmother go, and she was a very industrious woman. So she would go to the farm. At the same time, she would prepare meat pie and sell meat pie and all that. So as children, sometimes when she's going to the farm, being the oldest daughter, granddaughter. Okay. I would go with her to the farm to, you know, accompany her to experience that life. Sometimes I would even help her plant, sow the seeds, you know, in the farm. When she's coming back, sometimes she'll give you little items to carry, and you just, we just enjoyed every bit of it. And they used to have this village, you know, at the farm. There was a farmhouse made out of wood and all that. So sometimes you cook, get satisfied even before we walk all the way back.
Back home.
And then also it was because her father owned the house at the time, you'd realize that most of the children, like my grandmother's siblings, were in that house, including her mother. You know,
so it was a big extended family setting.
And people were supportive. People were interested in each other's well-being. Mm-hmm. Even when grandma is not there, somebody can take care of you, can assist you and all that. So I must say it was an experience that I cherish the most and will want to do it again if I had the opportunity to do it again and again. Because it gave me the right, you know, attitude, the right, it prepared me to be able to deal with the future I did not know I was going to have, because having studied with that, having been able to go through that, go through the farm, even go to the riverside to fetch water, you know, what else as a young child can, you know, so it gave you the mind, that toughness to be able to deal whatever situation you're confronted with.
I like that, like when you spoke of the environment, the community. But today, how our children are brought up, you don't really get a sense of community like it used to be. It seems like people are always keeping their children indoors. They don't go out that much. They don't interact with people that much. And people are now even stuck on TV. So I think the future is going to be exciting because people are not really being built with these skills. But how then did you now move to from secondary school to tertiary? What happened?
Okay, so right from secondary school, because mom was based in Abidjan, La Côte d'Ivoire, every time when I was on vacation, I'll sometimes spend time with my aunties and, you know, you know, your extended family where they would also support you. So right after the secondary school, mom wanted us to relocate. So I moved to Abidjan in 2001. And went there. She wanted me to further my education there. And because I was coming from an Anglophone country, it was difficult to be able to integrate into the Francophone system. So it was mandatory, it was compulsory for you to do 1 year French language at the university so that you could read any discipline you wanted to read. So I started learning compulsory language at the University of Kokodi. Currently, it's known as Université de Houphouët-Boigny. So at QF, so I did compulsory French for a year up to a point where we could, I could actually integrate into the system and read whatever course I wanted to read. But again, Côte d'Ivoire had a very interesting political climate in the sense that there was a lot of instability in their in the country because they had issues where one of their president, Robert Gay, was killed, and then we also had the Gbagbo era where Alassane Ouattara was trying to be president at the time. So the Côte d'Ivoire wasn't stable. So then they started fighting. There were rebels. You'd be in school. They come and then the foreign students.
Did you experience all of that?
Oh, we experienced it. You know, you're going to school. There are too many barriers.
Wow.
And so it was difficult. So in 2003, I told my mom that, Mommy, I'm not staying here. I just want to go back to Ghana and then do whatever I have to do and stay in Ghana. So I came to Ghana in 2003. Again, had to deal some papers. I had to reset and all that. And then had the opportunity whilst doing that, because I was already exposed, because in Côte d'Ivoire, after school, like going to my mom's shop with my sisters, we work, we sell, we do stuff, because she was an esthetician. So she does women's stuff, facial treatment, things like that. So I'll go there with my younger sisters and we all get to work in the shop. So that skill was already there. So when I came to Ghana, I said, no, I'm not going to stay without doing nothing. I know how to, you know, I've seen money and I must learn to work and make my own money. So,
you build that entrepreneurial mindset.
Right from my grandmother in the village and then my mom. Mm. So I decided to then, a family friend of ours, one Francis Decker at the time, he had a printing press. So he said, oh, there's an opportunity. I need a secretary. Would you be willing to come on board? So whilst preparing to go back, reintegrate into the Ghanaian system.
So that was before you integrated into the tertiary or after the tertiary?
That was in Ghana. Before after. I started working, yes.
Okay.
With Francis Decker as his secretary at Pixel AIM. So the office was around the Joy FM stretch. And it was a printing. Kokomlemle, yes. So he used to do printing press where people would come there to do their color separation and all that. So there were quite a number of companies we used to work with. So as a young woman, I was working with him as a secretary, in charge of his finance, stuff like that. It also offered me the opportunity to meet other people.
So with your experiences now working as a secretary, what was going through your mind? Who did you want to become? And you are now working as a secretary. What were your future ambitions? Did you feel you're missing out on something all during that time? Or you're just living life as a young person?
I mean, I think that as a young person, I was just living my life. As I said, at every particular point in time, I knew what I wanted. When I didn't want to be idle, I wanted something to keep me busy at the time whilst I prepare for my vision. So that was just the stepping stone to keep me going so that I won't be bored. And then I'll also get some experience, you know, how corporate life is like. So already I'd worked with my mom in an informal sector. So I wanted to experience how the office system, how things are done. And that was my motivation for wanting to work as a secretary for this company, Pixel Image, at the time. Yes.
And how did this experience play out when you started tertiary? When you started the university.
Okay.
Did these experiences make you you know, so there's this school of thought that says that those who finish school immediately, let's say finish secondary school and immediately go to tertiary, they are not as focused as people who have worked before and coming to tertiary. Because those who work have had a taste of how life is outside school. So, like, they are very focused. They know what they want as compared to people who just move straight into tertiary. Do you feel that because you worked, it made you be very focused on what you wanted when you were studying?
I think it's just an individual thing. As a person, your persona, your foundation, what you want to achieve, you know, the forces that are driving you. I didn't want to be idle because I had seen money.
Per our analytics on YouTube, we noticed that 97% of the people who watch our content are not subscribers. If you like what you're putting out there and you want more of it, please do well to subscribe to this channel and let us know who you want to speak to, the topics you want us to speak on, and we'll bring that to you. And let's make sure that we are growing and also making the impact in your life that you want. Thank you so much, and thank you for subscribing.
Right. And the only way to make money is to work for the money. Yes. And that was the reason why I said I have to do something with my life whilst waiting. So there was an end goal, there was a vision, there was something, but in the interim, what can you do to learn? So I seized the opportunity when this, remember, I wasn't looking out there for it. The opportunity came. And I said, well, why not? I'll jump onto this train and then, you know, get the experience.
Yeah.
So that learning actually helped. So it's just an individual thing. It doesn't matter if you're a focused person, if you there's something motivating and driving you. It doesn't matter, right? After school, if you go into the tertiary space and also start working, I don't think it really matters. It really doesn't. Everybody's journey and path is different. Yours may be different from mine. Others will do that and see money and would not want to develop themselves. So it's just about you as a person and what drives you.
Then now, how did you, after school?
Yes.
Corporate life. How
yes, did that good. Begin? So we started, I started working, and then, as I said, I had to research a few papers before I could go back to the university. Mm-hmm. And I met some, you know, good friends along the way. So at a point when I wanted to go back to school, one of them said, oh, Cassie, there's a job opening somewhere. And the person said, because you are bilingual, she'd like to, and because you have secretarial experience, mm-hmm. she'd like to work with you. So that December, I had to, you know, quit the current job because mm-hmm. there was another opportunity knocking on my door. And then mm-hmm. the new company then was Reach Select, and that's the Stanley Pierre family. So Mensah Stanley Pierre interviewed mm-hmm. me and said, oh, Cassandra, I'd like you to join our organization as a trainee, so we'll train you mm-hmm. when the opportunities will get you to perform relieving duties, you know, and all that. And the fact that you're bilingual yeah. is the reason why I would want to do that. And Mensah at the time also had some French background because she had worked with the United Nations. So I joined other young women, that's Harriet, Theodora, and then we worked at M's office. The office was directly opposite Crown Apartment to Airport Residential.
Okay.
So we worked with her. So she then started, you know, also in addition to what I had learned from the previous employer, you're building my confidence, telling me, girl, you can do this, you can do that. A few times she'll send you on relieving duties at IFC. Their office used to be around the golf house area.
Okay. That's Chiashi.
No, they are now at Chiashi, but they used to be around M Plaza.
M Plaza.
Okay. The Roman Ridge area before they moved into that building. Yes. Yeah. So she would say, Cassandra, you need to build your confidence. You need to do this. You need to do that. It's a corporate world that we are not looking at people's age, and we are looking at what you're capable of doing, what difference you can make, you know, the positive vibe and all that. And she was organized. Mensah was very, very organized. So even at that young age, she had given you that kind of experience. So then Mensah did her bits, and then one day in her office, I met someone who we came across, Wandela. She came in for an interview because I think she was aspiring to, you know, do something, but do something else. You know? Okay, so I think Origin 8 at the time was doing a recruitment and Reach Select, and I think Sycon HR were in charge of that. So this woman meets me there. Apparently, she was an HR person and I was pleasant to her. So when she was leaving, she took my contact and said, oh, if there's anything, I'll get in touch with you. So that was it. That was it. And she was coming from the banking sector. So that
I like that part of the story. So you were pleasant to her.
I was pleasant.
And she
to
just
her.
Liked you.
She liked me. That was it. And that day, I think I was wearing a fabric made that was sold in Abidjan. She said, oh, she likes the detail around that fabric and everything. So that's how we became friends.
So I think picking from that, right? So To our people listening, she's made a very important point.
Yeah.
She spoke about treating people well.
Yes.
You got her attention. And also dressing very well. Today, a lot of young people dress in very interesting ways. But good dressing can also get you some opportunities.
Yeah.
And I hope that we are taking notice of that.
Yeah.
So let's go into the story.
Yes. So she, Dela, was good. She took my CV and said, oh, if something comes up, I'll get in touch. So when she left, immediately I had received, like, the following week, two calls. And these were opportunities with, I think, GT Bank at the time. And then there was an opportunity with Standard Trust in Tema at the time. So she called me and I said, oh, Dela, I have no idea. I don't know where Tema is. So that's the reason why I won't even take the job, because I don't know how I'll commute from house around the Ashalibutre area to
Tema.
So because I don't know Tema, I'm begging you, I won't be able to, and I don't want to disappoint you. Then another role came.
Yeah.
It was GT Bank. So I had to attend the interview at the time around Ridge. They said it was a tailoring role. When I said tailoring, I'm not a figures person. So to talk about tailoring, what am I going to do here? You know, so I just told the panel that I thanked them for the opportunity. However, my strengths are not in this area. So I wouldn't like to take this offer on and disappoint them.
That's interesting.
So I honestly told them, and they thanked me and said, if something comes, and they said, okay. So I said, if something secretaryship, something admin, I'm happy to do it because that I'm well skilled at that. But anything tailoring, I'm sorry, I won't be able to take the offer.
I'm,
said,
I'm, okay. I'm very interested in that.
Yes.
So you really knew what you wanted.
I really knew what I wanted at that particular point in time. And I was just an honest person. I did not want to take something on that I had no idea on how to navigate just because it was available. Yes, I need a job, but I won't just go and take something that I can't deliver.
I think that's important. Don't just take a job because it's available.
Yes.
Not take something that you can, you just want to take it and you will not deliver.
You won't. So I just told them, and I was honest, you know, because as a young person, I had a free mind. I speak my mind. I say it as it is without fear or favor.
So did you even get scared that telling the people this thing is like, you are showing off?
No, that wasn't it. Because I knew what I wanted. I had options. As I said, banking wasn't like, I wasn't dreaming of working in a bank. My mind was on something else, going to do something bilingual secretary somewhere or working on an airline. So what am I going to do in the bank? So the bank wasn't part of the discussion. So this was a good opportunity, but I didn't want to go, you know, take that job on. So the panel was quite shocked, but I mean, I told them, they said, oh, they appreciate me telling them that if something comes up, they'll reach out to me. And I walked off and called the woman and said, Madam Della, this is what I told the people. If they call you, this is what I said. So don't be surprised.
Right.
So that was it. Then she, at the time, I had even enrolled at the Ghana Airways Training College. They were doing a program around government secretariat.
You wanted to be an air hostess too?
I wanted to work at the airline because it was interesting, it was fun, the travel experience.
I see.
So that was the kind of thing I really
wanted.
Yes, that kind of experience. So I had started that. So I called her and said, Madam, you know what, this one, I'm sorry to disappoint you, but I told them. And she was like, okay, so what do we do now? So if something else comes up, just let me know. And I'm sorry to disappoint you, but she said, it's okay, Cassandra. So the last time when she called, I think she had tried to reach me. That last call was a call that was introducing me to my current employer. So she called and said, oh, there's a vacancy and they are sourcing for CV. So I've recommended you and gave your CV to them. So you can reach out to XYZ with this organization. Now, I didn't even know where Stanbic Bank was located. So I said, so where's this company? She said, Stanbic. I said, Stanbic. What is that? Stanbic, I don't. So I asked someone, and the person said, oh, there's a company, there's a South African bank, they're somewhere at Ridge. Now, how do I get to this place? So remember, I'd returned back to Ghana, and I hadn't lived, you know, explored Accra that much.
So you didn't know
so I didn't
much
even
of the
know
places.
How I was going to find my way to this Ridge. So now they needed to show me how I'll get the trotro to pick one from here, get off here, then you pick another one to get at the Ridge roundabout, and then walk and cross to that building. So I had to explore, and I did that. So there I found myself at Stanbic, met one in Estina, Dankwa, and then Doris Jeha. So they interviewed me and said, oh, there's a job available here on the executive floor, and they need someone, a young person, to mind their reception for them. I said, okay. And am I available to do XYZ? Because the person there, that was Marwin, was moving on to something else. So as a secretary to the director of operations at the time, Daryl Poonan.
Okay.
So can you do this? And I said, why not? I'm willing to. And they said, can you start maybe the following day and all that? So I went through the interview process and started. When I started, then that was it. And that's, and the organization has been good. I've grown in my career. That same year, I had enrolled at a tertiary. I gained admission at Central University. And I pursued a BSc admin in human resource. So whilst working, I was also schooling. So I've had to juggle this at every point in time, doing work and then schooling because I said I love money, so I must always learn how to find, make money, my own money.
Yeah, get that.
And that's what, so I was working and also schooling. And at the end of the course, I had to also, you know, do my service with the same organization because remember, I had developed myself with this institution. I'd seen the opportunity, I had grabbed it, you know, and I was fully present at all times to ensure that I do what I've got to do in the institution.
Yeah.
Every team activity, you see Cassandra Ejepon at the time, because that was my maiden name.
Okay.
Featuring in everything. So we did the, we had the teams competition that year, 2007. Stambik Ghana won, and then we represented at the director's dinner at Santin Conventional Center.
Okay.
So the team members.
That doesn't sound like Ghana.
Pardons?
The Santin Conventional Center, where is it?
In South Africa.
Good.
So we all flew there. No, it doesn't. So we flew to South Africa. We went to celebrate and we made Ghana proud. And then in 2008, myself and another colleague, Malik Kenyamador, we also won the Africa Day Challenge as team members. So we also represented Ghana in Durban, where we did a commercial for the Standard Bank Group. So had a commercial and I represented Ghana with Malike. It was a great experience. We were in Durban. So as a young person, I was actively involved in everything that was happening in the organization. I was doing my work, doing what I had to do. And so far, I would say it's been great. And that doesn't mean I haven't had difficulties as a child growing up.
I think we'll come to the difficulties then. But for you sharing your story from your childhood to where we've gotten to now, what I really see is that you were somebody who was very present in the things that you were doing.
Yes.
And you're always set up for opportunities.
Yes.
You knew what you wanted.
Yes.
You never gave up. And I think that is something very commendable that a lot of young people have to look at. Stay the course. Whatever that you want to do, it will come up in time if you do not give up. So really stay the course. And I like what Cassandra is sharing. But what would you say are some of the pivotal decisions you've made in life that has kept you relevant? I know you have shared your story, the things that happened, but in the difficulties, in the challenges, what are some of the pivotal decisions that you feel that you took and that really helped you where you are today?
I think I was disciplined. I was disciplined and I was, I knew what I wanted. So I wasn't going to settle for less. I wasn't also going to lower my standard to please any individual. And I wasn't following peer pressure. I wouldn't succumb to pressure. I could be in the hall with the people, would make merry, have fun, but I always had a mind of my own. So that also helped me. And I also had a spirit of discernment to be able to identify the kind of people to, you know, associate yourself with. Because I'm of the view that if you want to get to a particular destination, you have a particular ambition, and you keep surrounding yourself with the wrong people, how are you going to get there? You're in a room of with a room with people who are failures, who people who feed you with negative vibe. I always wanted, you know, people with positive vibe to be around me so that we can share a common vision. And those were the things that really kept me going. And I knew it that at every particular point in time, I kept saying that no condition is permanent.
That's true.
I kept saying no condition is permanent because I, you know, today you're a big guy sitting here, tomorrow you'll be a nobody.
Yeah.
Today you're a rich man, tomorrow you're a poor guy begging on the street. So, you know, kingdoms keep rising and falling, things change. Because change is constant. So I knew
But at least let's keep the change in a positive sense.
but you see, that change that I'm talking about, you should also avert your mind to the worst case scenario. What if it doesn't work? Do you always have a plan B? You need to have a plan B.
Right.
If it doesn't work, what's your next plan? Don't be fixated. So I wasn't that kind of person who had said, okay, I want to work in the airline. I want to do this. I want to do that. So mm-hmm. if it doesn't happen, it's like I'm folding my arms and watching. Yeah,
it's airline or nothing.
In fact, when I joined my organization, when I started working, I told them, I said, even if I'm given a table to clean here, me, yeah. I'll clean the table, look, because all I want is experience. And yes. I meant it. Yes. I said, even if you ask me to clean the table, I'll clean it because I need experience. Because mm-hmm. I don't have anything up there in terms of experience. Yeah. I need to build the skill as a young person.
Yeah.
So how do I go and say, no, you have a degree, you have this, so once you start, you want to be the boss. No, you must learn what goes on around. So even if you ask me to open the door, it's an experience because I'll be greeting the people.
But I like what you are saying about experiences.
Yeah.
And in your story, we had a couple, you mentioned a few names.
Yes.
And these people were like mentors to you.
These people made an impact, you know, in your corporate journey. And also even in Stanbic Bank, I had the first branch manager I worked with. She was instrumental of blessed memory.
My question really is, how did you make the best out of these relationships? Because sometimes I find that, and I'm sure a lot of people would actually relate with this, you tend to know a lot of big shots, but you don't really get any value from them. It's like they know you, but they're not really, you're not getting any value. Let me say it that way. You're not getting any value from them. So like, I know Cassandra. Cassandra knows me. Cassandra knows I'm looking for something. And mm-hmm. I feel Cassandra has the ability to assist me. But I don't see Cassandra come through for me, even when I talk to her about it. But how are you able to get your needs in the conversations with your mentors in a way that you're able to get something valuable from them?
Great. So, one, humility. I went to them as a novice who had nothing and wanted to learn. So I went with that posture, that attitude that I wanted you to get me this, guide me through this journey. I wasn't going to beg them for food and I wasn't going to beg them for money.
Mm-hmm.
I needed something that, you know, you need to teach me how to, you know, go to the riverside and fish for myself and make a living for myself. So basically, that's what these relationships were for. Like the branch manager I worked with, she was particular about Hannah Anubelako of blessed memory. She was particular about, you know, a woman developing herself, a woman rising to the occasion, a woman being more, and she was humble, you know, in terms of her leadership style at the time. And she showed keen interest in developing all her team members.
Right.
Again, if I look at somebody like Mensma Stanley Pierre, she was a firm woman, she was disciplined, she was strict, and she would get you, you know, to be the best version of yourself. You know, she has meetings before she gets there. She wants you to organize yourself in a particular way. So for all these individuals, friends I came into contact with, it wasn't to beg for money, it wasn't to beg, but it was to ensure that they were impacting me positively. I looked at their positive side because, again, all these individuals may have their weaknesses, but I looked at the better side of them, and then I could actually make the best out of it. Yeah,
I can see that you really categorized your mentors.
Yes,
it's like you know exactly what you want from each of them, and you go all out for that.
Yes, and that's why if you ask me, I wouldn't even say I have a specific mentor because they are quite a lot. Because every situation, at every point in your life, there are times and seasons. Someone comes in handy at a particular time. Right. So God sends that guiding angel at a particular time. So if you say one individual is your mentor, yeah, I think it's a limitation. Because maybe the person, my mom is my mentor because there was something about her. My grandmother is my mentor because there was something unique about them that propelled me to be what I am
today.
My aunties and uncles, whatever situation you went through propelled you to be more. So I wouldn't say I have one specific mentor because if I did, and then I'll say, okay, I just want to be in the airline industry. I just want to be here. But I just had an open mind.
I think that's also an advice that someone gave me.
Yes.
So the person was like, Kwabena, if you're looking for a mentor, don't take somebody who is good at everything.
Yes.
If you are looking at your finances, take a mentor who is good at finances.
Yes.
If you're looking at your family, being a father, being a husband, take people who are good at that and let them teach you that.
Yes.
Because you would hardly find somebody who is good at everything.
Yes.
You see? So I think that's good advice. Based on what you want to achieve, define it, find somebody who is good at that and learn from that person
at that particular point.
Great. Now let's go into the arena of finances.
Yes.
Right? Since you also work in the banking industry, I know you play around these things often.
Okay.
What's one financial mistake that you see young people commit today, and how can they avoid it?
That's interesting. It depends on who we're speaking to. Mm-hmm. Who are we speaking to now? Anyway, so I'll say that.
I'll say that we are speaking to young people between the ages of 25 and 34.
Okay. So I would say that one of the areas that I think they could do better is that most of them are reckless with their finances. I'll say reckless in quote, in the sense that not all of them, some. Mm-hmm. Maybe reckless with their finances. You've graduated from school, you're making good money. All they think about is buying sophisticated gadgets, buying, you know, expensive shoes and bags and all that. Mm-hmm. But I'll say as a young person, there's more to life than that. Because within those ages of your life, you know, they are critical stages that you need to, you know, get your savings going on, because right after school, some would get into marriage, some would also start bearing children, mm-hmm. and it's expensive. It's not cheap to, you know, raise your children. So I would say that at that particular point in time, you need to be more, you know, responsible with your finances. You need to save the more. Mm-hmm. And the good thing is we have so many investment houses that you can, you know, do your investments with, including organization like where I work, Stanbic Bank and others. We have Stanbic Investment Management and all that. So these are areas that you can actually allocate some of your funds, like have a budget, a clear budget in mind. So you can set some funds aside for your plans, even to further your studies. Not all may have their parents. Like, I lost my father when I was pretty young. So if you are in that stage, you also need to save to be able to develop yourself the more, because you need to be a better version of yourself down the lane when you are 40, 50, when you are in middle or top management, you know, and preparing for your retirement. So savings is key. And the budget, certainly, you definitely need a budget. And you must, you know, be responsible, much more responsible in the things you do. Lavish lifestyle, avoid peer pressure. The fact that your friends are all driving Bentley doesn't mean you should drive a Bentley. I remember when I took my first car loan in my organization, my other colleagues were buying Toyota Yaris at the time, different cars. I bought a manual car because at the time my salary and the amount I could afford was a loan of $13,500.
Okay.
I bought myself a Renault Clio from CFAO, and I drove that car without any issues. I didn't spend more. The fuel consumption
was okay.
Like the engine capacity was 1.4.
Oh, that's good.
It was very good. But you see, as a young person, I didn't want stress.
Yeah.
I didn't want a car that would take away from my small salary.
Yeah.
And I didn't want any issues of here, this, and that. Mm-hmm. So I made sure I drove my manual car when my friends were driving their automatic
cars.
Yaris cars and Toyota words.
Yeah.
But I was happy. And
that's the most important thing.
I was happy because you need to know yourself. You need to know what you can afford. You need to live within your means as a young person. And most of them sometimes get carried away. They follow the crowd. Everybody's driving a Mercedes. I want to drive a Mercedes.
Yeah.
Everybody's driving a BM. I want to drive a BM. Everybody's driving this. Young ladies, gentlemen, it's important that you know who you are. You know your financial states, what you earn on a monthly basis.
Yeah.
You need to have a clear budget.
Yeah.
Because maybe Kwabena here is earning twice or thrice your salary. You all graduated from the same university.
At the same time.
Kwabena may even have a father, a rich father, a rich mom who is sponsoring him. You never can be sure. So trying to compete, you know, and all that creates some financial stress and, you know, mismanagement around your finances.
I hope the young people are listening. Don't create that stress for yourself.
No,
because you should,
pressure.
I always say that don't cut your coat according to your size, but according to the material.
Yeah.
Maybe you are a plus size.
Yes.
And your material is small. You can't sew a big dress.
Yes.
So really cut your coat according to the material that you have.
Yes.
And I think that is good advice.
Yes.
That is good advice. Because I really see that even amongst the few young people that I mentor, they're in a hurry.
Yes.
They're in a hurry to get things. But listening to your story today, there was a trajectory.
Yes.
You had to go through the mill. You had to build yourself and prepare you for the opportunities that were ahead of you. Of course, you didn't know that this opportunity would come.
Yes.
But you were present. And that's what I like about your story.
Yes.
Like, in every moment, you were present.
Yes.
And I think that's what we should do as young people. Any moment we find ourselves in. You know, at a point in my life, I used to sell Alata Seminar, black soap.
Yeah, I know. I know Alata Seminar.
So I used to sell the shampoo part of black soap.
Yes.
We had made it in like a shampoo form.
Yes.
And I used to go to markets, Manprobi Market, Balam Market. I was standing in the market and I had some PA system.
Yes.
And I was shouting Alata Seminar. One day I met one woman in my church. Like I saw her, she didn't see me.
Yes.
When I saw her, no, I had to dodge. You know, I was feeling. I wanted to do it, but it was like, what university? You have gone to university.
Yes.
You have come to do this kind of work.
Yeah.
But I felt like I could have sat at home comfortably. My father has a house. The food I'll eat is not a problem.
Yes.
But I felt like I have to do something for myself.
You have
I did that. And I also drove an Uber at a point. It was crazy. The experience was maybe for another day.
Yes.
But the point is, you remain present.
Always and seize the opportunities
that come
your way. And network is also very key. Network is important because in the stories I've shared, my personal life experience, some individuals have made an impact.
Definitely.
So that solid network and divine connection, meeting those people at the right time, at the right places can transform your life.
Yeah. Talking of divine connection, I see that you're a woman of strong values.
Yes.
I see from what you're talking, the things that you wanted, you made sure you went for them.
Yes.
So, and as a Christian, how have you married your Christian values to your achievement, the things you want to achieve, managing family, managing work, and your social, everything that comes with it? How have you kept your values intact without losing track of them and falling into something that you wouldn't want to see yourself in?
Yeah, so I would say that I'm a Christian, but again, I'm not perfect because we are all sinners, so you have your own weaknesses, your own challenges, you've had difficulties, you've had to go through at one particular point in your life. And again, sometimes, you know, you could also run into some relationships that are not, you know, what that would not actually give you that positive vibe. But again, in all these, I've kept my composure, and the family system is very important to me. I value that the most. And my husband, Yaudapa, has been supportive. I've been blessed with two children, twin daughters, and navigating all this and also keep encouraging other young people coming up. That is not easy. It's difficult, but I do my possible best to, you know, continue to respect, you know, the values that are innate in me as a person. Also, whatever I have to do in terms of fellowshipping, finding a right church, a right place to fellowship and all that, I do that. And so that at every point in time when you're going off, you know, you're reminded that there's someone,
there's some check
on you. Yeah.
So, if you were 25 again, 25 mm-hmm. years again,
yeah,
knowing what you know today, what would you have done differently?
25 years. My response to you will be very easy. I'll just avoid, there are some friends that I'll never, ever, and I'll say never, ever, would have wished to have in my life.
Hmm.
You know, and because you can tell that those individuals were just a negative vibe. Hmm. They didn't add value. They just took away from you.
Hmm.
So if I was 25 years, those were friendships that I wouldn't have wasted my time on and would have just, you know, stayed away from them.
Interesting. Yes. Interesting. And what books have you read that has really changed your perspective about life?
There are quite a number of them. I've read, there's a book I read about, you know, a child called It, how kids are sometimes abused and the torture that children
go through
in their young age. Because as I said, my journey as a child hasn't been all rosy. I've had rosy moments. I've had very difficult situations that have really pushed you out of your comfort zone into, you know, very uncomfortable situations.
Mm-hmm.
And I've also read the book by Margaret Kwakwa, which is L'argent ne fait pas le bonheur. Okay, so money can't...
You love your French.
Yes.
You love and your money, French.
And money can't buy you happiness. I believe in that because Kwamna can have so much money, but I don't believe that money can buy happiness. You have money, but you need people to make merry with you.
That's true.
You have money, but you need the family. You need a system. Money can't feed you.
Mm-hmm.
Money can't give you good health.
Mm-hmm.
Even though other school of thoughts will say if you have money, you can get everything you want. I beg to differ because not everybody is controlled by that money.
Right.
Get what I mean? So I love the values in that particular book that said that money cannot buy happiness. And I am a strong believer that money can't buy happiness because there are so many people with so much wealth, but they're very miserable people.
Mm.
In their quiet moments, they're going through a lot.
Right.
And I'm sure some other people may not have anything in their poverty. They live and rejoice in the Lord, and they're happy. They're just having, you know, a good time. And, you know, they're not scared of anything. So,
True.
That's a book that also really, really, you know, stayed with me. Yeah.
Mm. What's one quote that keeps you going?
I shared my quote with you already. No condition
is
permanent.
Right.
Today we are sitting here. Tomorrow your status will change.
Amen.
My status will change.
For the better.
For the better. For the better. And that's why when you see your friends, your classmates in the classroom, it would amaze you that the ones that you least respect in the next couple of years are going to be the shining stars in your classroom. And some of them who were all its, who felt that they had arrived, there's money at home, and all that. It was just okay with their situation. So always look out for those vulnerable ones amongst your friends and classmates because you never know how or things can change or what has been destined for them in terms of whatever they believe in. You cannot tell what the future holds because maybe they will have bright future, but seeing them, you may not pay attention to the miss.
So what's that one thing you're going to tell a young person listening to this podcast today to do in order to make their life a better place for themselves?
I'll say, young lady, young man, whoever is listening to me, I just want to inspire you by my story. And I want you to be yourself. Just know who you're made of. And grab every opportunity that comes your way. Do not let it pass you by. Stay focused. Be energetic. Be exciting as you can. Because everybody wants positive vibe. that organization you're looking for, that job you're searching for, that husband you're looking for, that boyfriend or girlfriend you're looking for, the money you're looking for wants positive energy, positive vibe. So go out there with that positivity and your mind, it would amaze you the things you can do. It would amaze you the power that you have. Not everybody has to work in, you know, that organization, but see yourself as the next CEO who would have created that multi-billion corporation that's going to hire young Ghanaians and people across the globe. Mm-hmm. You can do it. I have done it. It is possible. There's no shortcut to life. Keep moving forward with all the positive energy. Look up to good people. Surround yourself with people who share the same values as yourself. You know, delete all the bad company. You just don't need them because they're toxic. They're really, really toxic. Just make up your mind to eliminate those individuals out of your network because you don't need them. And I'm certain that you'd one day say that this podcast has really made an impact. It has changed your perception because the opportunities around you. Just look to the next person who sits by you in your classroom, at your church place, in a restaurant, and seize the opportunity. You never know what you can do. You can just collaborate with someone, make it bigger and better. And I, Cassandra and Kovna, will be here to cheer you on as definitely. Your Raven fans. Thank
definitely,
you.
Definitely. We'll definitely be here to cheer you on.
And Cassandra, as your Raven fans.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much.
Thank you for
sharing
your time.
Your story.
Thank you so much.
Your story is very inspiring.
Yeah, thank
and
you.
And one of the things that I liked about you is I just found you on LinkedIn, right?
Yes.
And when I saw the name Dapa, I was like, I hardly see Dapa's around. So I have to talk to her.
Yes.
I looked at your bio, like, some of the great things that you've done. For me, one of the most intriguing things is how you've stayed in one organization for almost 2 decades,
yes.
But you've been able to rise through the ranks.
Yes.
And I must say that's something I admire a lot. And today, hearing your story, I understand where and how you've gotten to where you have. You definitely have an amazing story.
Yeah.
And I think that people are going to listen to this, especially the ladies,
yes.
Are going to keep it to heart and make better decisions in life. And to our sponsors, AH Cafe, I want to say a very big thank you to AH Cafe,
yes.
For giving us this place. AH Cafe is located just around Alisa Hotel. They actually share the same premise with Metro TV. So if you're looking for a place for lunch, for breakfast, if you live within the vicinity or you work within the vicinity of North Ridge, you can come by and serve yourself some nice delicacies here. So AH Cafe, thank you so much. And to my team, thank you guys for making this work. And I'll definitely see you in the next episode. It's bye for now.